You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel, and I am hosting this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast on hoopfeed.com. And we are in between the end of the college basketball season and right before the WNBA draft, and it seemed like a perfect time to get ready for the most exciting times in international basketball in my eyes. And I know how important the world championships are to everybody else, but I still, that Olympic gold medal always just means so much to so many people. And I'm pleased to talk USA Basketball with the woman that runs the program, basically, USA Basketball's women's national team director, Carol Callen. And Carol, welcome to Dishin' and Swishin'.
David, thank you very much. My pleasure being here.
Carol, it's been over 20 years now since you've been running this program, and it has to be amazing to see the difference in just every facet of everything you do, from the player skills to the communication methods to the logistics of getting people together and finding places to go.
Well, and believe it or not, the communication methods probably are the ones that have really changed the most. I remember in 95, 96, when I was first hired to direct the team that played in Atlanta, I think I was the only one that had a cell phone, and they used to laugh at me for basically having it glued to my ear. And now you move through, of course, with emails, and now emails are almost antiquated, to texting and all of the social media. I'm not sure I'm a great participant in social media. As a matter of fact, I really try to avoid that simply because I don't think there are enough hours in the day to do it. But it is pretty amazing, the game and how it's grown. And I think it's just such still an exciting time to watch all of that. And women's basketball has made such strides. You look at the athleticism of the players coming in. And I also remember back 95, 96, we did a year-long program. And when we began and we would play, versus a year later when we took the floor, people talked about just the transformation of the players and their bodies, because so much of our training was really spent physically getting the players stronger and faster and endurance-wise, to now where that's just the way players come in. It's absolutely amazing when you look at the growth of the game.
You know, just looking at that team first, going back to that 95-96 time period, I just can't even imagine how much work and how involved it had to have been, first in getting the commitments from the players and the coaches to get this done in a fashion that would make it succeed, but to try and set up over that time a 52-game schedule and get everybody in place and everything that had to be done, that was just an amazing amount of work. And, you know, you certainly deserve all the accolades that have gone with that team. And, you know, when you see the WNBA now, I mean, do you sit back and kind of smile and say, this is because of me?
Well, I never say it's because of me. Obviously, that would be probably taking way too much of the credit, certainly. You know, if we go in order, I guess David Stern and Val Ackerman are the two that probably deserve it most, and then all of the players. But my point being, even that 95-96 team, you never, and that's one of the best parts about my job, is you never do anything entirely by yourself. And I take it very seriously that this is USA Basketball. While it's a small nonprofit organization, it represents basketball in this country, and we are a very democratic group. We do things by committee. We have a lot of people that help us. Because we're a small organization, we take volunteers from all areas and ways. And that 95-96 team, it was really interesting. At the time, I was chair of the Player Selection Committee and serving as an officer on USA Basketball's Executive Committee. But I still had a real job, which I was the high school assistant principal and athletic director in Boulder, Colorado. And as the planning started to unfold, they obviously needed to hire a director of the team. And so I was hired in I believe it was February 1st, 1995. And we had our trials and our first trip in June. So there were a couple of months that I had to devote completely to that. but there had been quite a bit of training done by Lynn Berry prior to that. And then it was just a multi-headed monster, so to speak, that put that together. But yes, you know, I remember we would go pretty much every 3 days to a new college to play. And we had 22 games against colleges. And every 3 days we'd go. And as we arrived in one, I was then really starting to work on the next, because once you arrive, you know, it pretty much all takes care of itself then in terms of practice and games. So it was always just never a dull moment till late at night, early in the morning. But what a rewarding time. It was interesting to watch the players not only mature as basketball players, and for the team to mature so that it was simply, there was no way that team wasn't going to win the gold medal. They had invested so much. But it was really interesting also to watch the fans' crowd excitement about it. And, you know, it was really kind of unique. The team had players on it that were founding members of the ABL and players that had already committed to the WNBA. So we had a team with players that were sort of, you know, in somewhat going to competing professional leagues at the time, but we were all playing together. And Tara Vanderveer, I think, did a terrific job of keeping everybody focused on winning the gold medal. That was the vision every single day of our lives. We had a notebook, and the very first picture was of the gold medal from, I think it was one of Teresa Edwards' other gold medals that she allowed us to take a picture of. So, once again, the growth couldn't have happened without a bunch of people, but the work was there daily. And I don't think anybody thought about it being work. I think everybody just loved it.
Well, since you gave me the perfect segue to talking about the fact that this is so much about committees, and USA Basketball is so much about different people taking on different facets, and one of the things that is still somewhat of a mystery to a lot of people is how the pool of players is selected and then whittled down some. Can you give a brief description as to how the procedure actually goes on and who does that?
Sure. We have a five-member committee right now, player selection committee. Myself, Renee Brown from the WNBA, Teresa Edwards, who is the athlete representative, and the USOC requires that we have 20% representation. So with just a little bit of math, five members, one of them makes 20%. So Teresa is the athlete rep, and then Dan Hughes and Kelly Kroskoff as GMs, and actually Dan also coaches, that those five people form the committee that actually picks the players that will be in our pool as well as make the final 12-member roster. But it's, you know, what's interesting is we've had, my first involvement was on a committee way back in 1989, and we had 22 members of that committee. It was, you know, a high school representative, which I was at the time, an NAIA representative, AAU, junior college, and then the rest were Division I college coaches because, of course, there was no professional league. And as we went from then to now, we've evolved into smaller. We had two committees at one time, one that picked players, one that picked coaches. Then we had a 10-member committee that did both at this higher, older level. And now we have a smaller five-member committee that picks this team, but we also have a junior national team committee made up of Division I coaches and an athlete, and then we have a that picks college-age teams, and we have a developmental committee that picks the U-17 and U-16 teams. So we've always done it with committee, and our players begin playing at such a young age. Diana Taurasi played when she was in high school, Tamika Catchings when she was in high school. So we've watched them go through the years, excuse me, not just our committee, but every committee that has those age groups. And then once they play in the WNBA, you know, and really we keep an eye on them, obviously, at college ages as well. Once they get into the WNBA, then our committee, because we're picking primarily players from the WNBA, it's primarily a committee made up of WNBA people. So that committee, we watch players over time. We look at who played last time around. So if we look at the pool from 2008, we have to figure out who's retiring, who's ready to continue on, and then who progressively over the 3 years emerges. So, you know, we can use Courtney Vandersloot as an example. You know, 2 years ago, she was in college starting to make a mark, but it wasn't really until as she went through the NCAA tournament that people knew about her, and then we asked her to come last May, her first opportunity with us. So they either start early with us or they emerge as they go, and we're not shy of picking anybody to add to our list. We call it a fluid pool. People come in, and we can add them as we go. There are some restrictions when we get to the Olympics that, you know, we have to have them in a drug testing pool a certain amount of time. We ourselves will have to pick this team by June 18th at the very latest. We have 11 members right now, one more to go. I don't know that we'll wait till June 18th, but, you know, there are certain deadlines that we have to follow. And then there's competitions and training camps that we do all the time that we always are continually looking at players.
Because, you know, part of the reason that it comes up is because there's always seems to be that one or two person people that people look at and say, well, how is she not included? Now, is it usually a case where nobody gets by you and people will just say no, or there's just too much at one position or something like that, where somebody that may appear to be somebody that should be in the pool isn't included? You know, for example, the person that I always hear comments about is Crystal Langhorne.
Well, and Crystal has been in our pool.
Right.
So she was in our pool. You know, there are several ways to look at it. Sometimes players look at the rest of the pool and go, yeah, okay, I don't know that I have a chance, so I'm going to go do some other things. We have them in the pool for a period of time. We change a committee, and the committee goes, you know, I think maybe somebody over here is somebody we're more interested in. So it's not always that the committee says no, but it's also sometimes the player says no. I don't think there's really anybody that we're not aware of, and I think then it just becomes, you know, a debate. People
yeah,
can have
a
debate.
Certainly,
you know,
a numbers game, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, we're you know, we could have every member of the WNBA in our pool, and that obviously isn't the case. So it does come down to judgment and people looking at something and going, and you know, and I'm also, you know, I don't necessarily want to say what a player has said to us before, because a player might say, no, you know, I'm not interested now.
Right.
And
no. And nor am I looking for that. You know, I'm not looking to put
yeah,
you on the spot,
right.
Carol.
Right.
I just mentioned the name because that's the one that comes up, but I'm not even looking for, you know, you to explain her. You know,
right.
It's just a general question.
Yeah, sure. And I think it's, you know, I think it's also a case of things, you know, other players maybe emerge and sort of take somebody's spot then in the minds of the committee as you look at a depth chart. And you can start big, but as you get closer to the Olympics, you really want to go smaller in terms of who you're considering. So at one point, I think prior to the World Championship, we might have had 31 or 32 in the pool. And, you know, about, I think, mid-January or so, we announced, or towards the end of January, we announced 21 finalists. And part of that is it's only fair to the players to let them know a little bit, too, where they stand. And so we have 21 finalists. We pick 11. That means now we have 10 people still in our quote-unquote finalist pool that we're still looking at then for that last spot.
Yeah, that was actually one of the questions I was going to have. I thought it was really kind of interesting that we cut it. USA Basketball cut from 27 to 21 to 11, basically without any additional camps. Yeah, you know, it was just a matter, and that was just to try and give people a chance to know where they stand and to make it more easy of a pool to work with.
Yes, I think it's more the case of letting them know where they stand, giving a little bit more focus to the ones that we are really looking at, and you know, it's interesting. We have, in the past, have not announced finalists. We've done it a little bit differently, actually, where we started off with six players as a core, and then we just added to it. Now we found that six players, while they want to say they can commit to being part of your core, sometimes they're not able to do that with the amount of training that we try to get in at the times we try to get in it. So, for instance, if we say to Player X, that you're a core member of our team, you're going to be on the team, but we need you to come to this training camp. There's no guarantee they can come just because they're either their WNBA team might be in the playoffs, or their international team might be doing something that they can't come. So the greater flexibility for us has been to move to a larger pool that we then use. Like last May, we brought everybody in the pool to Las Vegas for a training camp. But when we went in October overseas, we didn't take everybody because you just can't take that many people overseas. So we do it different ways, but your point is, I think, really an important one, that we have to make decisions sometimes without the opportunity to actually bring players into a training camp before we whittle down to a certain amount. And I think that's one of our greatest challenges, is that our players have such great opportunities to make money and play all basically every day of the year, that for us to find a training camp to use that as a quote-unquote trials just doesn't make sense anymore. So we try to look at them over time, and we try to, in a four-year period, all of those players in our pool, we try to see them at least once, and then we pay close attention to them as they play overseas, as well as how they're playing in the WNBA. And even though we don't see them, obviously there's, you know, players that carry teams overseas to, you know, the EuroLeague Final Eight, or they do well in those competitions, and that's another criterion that we use in deciding who should be on this team.
Yeah, and, you know, on that note, I was curious also, with the WNBA influence on the selection committee, with people like Dan Hughes and Kelly involved, is there any pressure from them and the WNBA to try and whittle that list down as early as possible? Because a number of teams, I mean, other countries aren't going to make their choices for a long time. But the U.S. has already narrowed it down to a list of basically, you know, to the team of 11. Is that to help make it easier for them to plan on the WNBA camps in part?
Not really. I mean, we certainly try to do things to benefit everybody in our country and in all the organizations, whether it be college or pro teams. But the reason we really wanted to announce the team now is we're trying to finalize a training camp in May during the WNBA preseason. And we certainly don't want to bring 20-some players into a training camp when it will take those players away from their WNBA team. I just don't think we don't do that to international teams either. And so because we're trying to put something together then, because obviously we can't do a whole lot of training. You know, the WNBA is going to break their season, and we'll have our team together for 2 weeks, but other countries are together for 2 months. So we have to use whatever time it is we have really efficiently. And so we wanted to identify the players, at least the majority of the players, prior to this WNBA preseason, if we can get this camp to work. And then, because the Final Four was in Denver, we brought the Olympic coaches in for a recognition during the semifinal games. And because the U.S. Olympic Committee is just down in Colorado Springs, the Final Four had a little bit of an Olympic theme to it. And it was an opportunity to enhance the weekend by announcing our team. The NCAA got excited about it. We did it at Tourneytown on Friday, March 30th. And you know, it was just a great partnership with them. And then ESPN got involved and wanted to have it live on SportsCenter with Coach Auriemma. So it was like a little bit of a things came together to give us the timing to do it now. We could have waited until June, but then at the same time, you've got players, I mean, they're on the edge of their seat as to what's happening, and they need to make plans for the summer. If some of their family and friends are going to come overseas, you don't want to wait to the very end. So it's just a variety of reasons. And because the Final Four was here, it just dovetailed nicely.
I thought it definitely added to the weekend of the Final Four, and it gave it part of that big announcement feel that you're talking about. I thought that was a great idea. And while I wasn't in Denver, everybody that I've spoken to talked about the goosebumps they felt when the coaches were all introduced, and especially Coach Summit, the applause that she got. And also I heard a lot of people just commenting on the class that Coach Ariema showed, considering that his team had lost earlier that night, and to still, you know, participate and be a part of it, and not just, you know, people would understood if he was not in the mood.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
He showed that
yeah.
commitment.
I agree. I totally, and I let him know several times how much I thought of him for that. And you know, the whole evening, you know, Pat was signing autographs for just about anybody that asked. She was so gracious. It was interesting to watch the interaction between both Gino and Pat down under the stands before we came out. The day before, Pat had come for the All-American announcement and arrived during UConn's practice, and Gino came over and they had a nice conversation. So I thought it was not only goosebumps, but I just thought it showed the little bit of the solidarity that they all have for each other and the appreciation. And all of them, you know, as much as I think the fans enjoyed it, their comments about how much they were appreciative really showed that it was a nice touch to the weekend as well. So I just think when you have an event like that, and women's basketball still is one of those sports where when you can bring a bunch of people together and get some synergy out of it, you know, it's a little bit, why wouldn't you? I don't think anybody was worried one thing would overshadow something else, because as the games began, those were outstanding in themselves. So it was a terrific weekend. I really enjoyed it.
And now when you look at this team, I mean, this is one of the best looking teams on paper that I can recall in Olympic women's basketball. It seems to have a little bit of everything, and it's got just an incredible combination of experience and youth. When you put together a team, when the committee puts together a team like this, is there kind of a little bit of a formula that they look for in terms of we really need X number of shooters and X number of point guards? Or is it just, you know, you're looking for the best the best athletes, best players you can get?
Yeah, it's really the former. You really need to look at each position, and you need, you know, people do that differently. I personally look at it, okay, we need two at each position, ones, twos, threes, fours, fives, and we need a couple people that are versatile, can swing different ways. You know, some people look at it, okay, who's my starting lineup, and then who am I replacing each one with first sub? And, you know, then what do you need there? Another way of looking at it that's been done in the past is, you know, take the top eight players, no matter who they are, and now fill in. Another way of looking at it, and the nice thing is we sort of look at it in a combination of all of these things. You know, my first involvement truly traveling with the team was that 95-96 team, and just two Olympians with experience, Teresa Edwards and Katrina McLean, were on that team, the other nine, because we had 11 at that point as well. We added a 12th player late. But the other nine, it was their first time. Now, when you're together for a year, you can have that kind of inexperience to go along with the two veterans and make it work very well. Since then, we've had probably, on average, six returnees of some sort, you know, six or seven, and then maybe five or six first-time players. And so this time around, you know, we have three that have been there twice, four that have been there once, and then four that are first-timers. You know, that's always very important to get that mix. I think that the younger ones understand that, you know, they defer pretty well to the veterans, that maybe the playing time should come from the veterans. And so, you know, that's a mix. You know, sometimes it doesn't do you any good to have a team all of veterans, and then the ones that are having to sit are the ones that are the veterans, and that doesn't work very well. So it's good for the young ones to learn from the older ones. But again, I don't think you would ever legislate or formulate not to have what you would consider to be the top seven or eight players on that team. You know, you can talk yourself in and out of things, but I think you still are trying to look for the best seven, eight players. And then you're looking for versatile people. You're looking for shooters. You're looking for defenders. You're looking for people that can maybe play, you know, inside but also step outside to defend. There's just all of that kind of discussion that goes into it. Which of the post players can make a high post pass, high post to low post pass? Who does that better than anybody else? And sometimes you don't know who can make a high post pass because they're always the recipient of the pass. And so that's what some of our training camps are for. So it could be as simple as, well, let's just sort of vote who are the best players out there and take the all-star team. But we can't afford to do that. And I do think it's a great team. I think we've had great teams in the past. Yet the international game is difficult. In the last two Olympics, even though we won gold medals, we went into the fourth quarter behind. So I think people sort of maybe don't even realize that. You still have to work very hard to put a good team together.
You know, it's funny how things change, too, how it constantly evolves. You know, it was just a few events ago where there was a small panic when Lisa Leslie decided that was it and who was going to succeed her, and the U.S. didn't have a post that could take care of business, and Yolanda Griffith was brought back at the 11th hour. Yeah, now you sit there and you look and you've got Parker and Charles and Fowles and Griner and all of these post players, and now you got to find guards that can handle the ball.
Yeah, it's always funny because, you know, people always have angst over who are the point guards and who are the post players. And yet, you know, we have such an abundance of riches here in so many resource areas, and I think that's the hardest thing for the coach, is to make all of those things work. And yet, I think when you said this at the beginning, that for you the Olympics is the ultimate in international competition, and our players have consistently, as long as I've been around and watched and observed, they have that compelling goal of winning a gold medal has driven them more than anything else, and for that, they will step back and make the extra pass, set the screen that maybe people don't realize is there. They'll allow someone else to take the shot. I've just, it's such a selfless group. They are so good. Even, you know, the ones that, you know, on their WNBA team or in college, they played every minute. And I think we calculated it one year. Lisa Leslie had the best top minutes, and it was 20 minutes a game out of the full 40. So they make it work because winning a gold medal is that important to them.
Does it bother you being in your position when some of these people sign on for other countries and take their nationality when they really don't have a tie to it?
Not really. You know, it's a rule that's there and allowed, and therefore I don't have a problem with it. I also do think that it's one of those competitions that's really special and people want to be a part of it. And there comes a point where we can only take 12. And so I understand that lure to play on the team. I think it's really, you know, it's interesting because our women's players play overseas, they actually are citizens of another country more than they are in, you know, day-wise, minute-wise, more than in our own country. That was always one of the greatest things about the WNBA, is that these players could come play on their home soil. But really, when you look at it, they are in another country longer during the year than they are in our country. So I really honestly don't have a problem with it. I think it's just fine. And, you know, I think it's about appropriate. I don't think there should be really more than one per team, which is what they have now. But even that, you know, I guess if somebody wanted to tell me would like to have a couple, I guess, you know, I'd certainly go along with whatever rule FIBA came up with. But I kind of like where it is right now, that there is one. Another example, you know, Sophia Young is in our pool, and you know, it took her 5 years to get U.S. citizenship, and, you know, she's, you know, the additional part of the rule is that you cannot have played on a national team for another country. Otherwise, you couldn't do this, and she hadn't. But I definitely think there are people that move to new countries and should have the opportunity to play in their new country. They're just as passionate about their new country as they were maybe of the country where they were born. So, again, I think the rule is fair. I think it's fine. And I'm just fine with it.
A couple of real quick last questions. Is there a time frame for coming up with that 12th spot? I mean, do you hold off just to see if, God forbid, somebody gets injured, or there's a lot of assumptions that it'll be that part of it was because Griner was still playing and that she's that player. I mean, is there a time frame to make that choice?
Well, you know, it is yes and no. I mean, the lengthy time that we could use is up until June 18th. That's the deadline that we need to submit our 12-member team to the U.S. Olympic Committee. But even beyond that, we submit 12-member team and then what we call replacement athletes in our world. So you can still change the team should there be an injury up until just a day or two before our first game. So those are the rules. So, you know, we like the flexibility of 11. Because if somebody were to get injured, you know, there are some players that maybe it would be hard to say one player takes their spot, but maybe we want to do it with two players moving into that position versus, you know, saying, no, we just want a post player or we just want a guard. So it allows us the flexibility should there be an emergency situation. But the flip side is the sooner we can pick the 12, then the sooner they know, you know, that 12th player knows, should we be able to pull off this training camp during the WNBA preseason, then, you know, we're training our 12-member team, not just our 11-member team. So the good news is we don't have to do it tomorrow, but we also could do it in the next, you know, month and get the full group together the first time we actually train. But again, with the flexibility in place, well, we don't really have to. So I guess that's a long answer to say I really don't know yet.
When you first gather, are you going to bring in the couple alternates as well?
Would you
bring in like 14 or 15 players for that 12 spot plus the others?
Yeah, in an ideal world, I would say yes. The one piece to this puzzle that isn't the ideal world is that we are taking these players away from their WNBA team potentially for the, you know, should we get that together. When we get together July 14th, then it's too late. We have to have named a player. So this is the only time that we would have the flexibility to do that, but, you know, we really hate to deplete the WNBA team with players that maybe won't for sure be on the team. So those are all those decisions that we need to kind of figure out and see how it all rolls out.
Now, regarding the coaching, a quick question on the actual position, the Coach Ariema, the head coach. You know, for years it said that they had to have 3 years of WNBA experience. Do you know why that was even put in there in the first place? And also, when did that come out? Because it clearly did.
Well, we basically have in our procedures that there are four coaches, one head, three assistants. Two of them will be WNBA coaches. Two will be NCAA coaches. And the two NCAA coaches aren't under the three-year. It says if you're a WNBA representative, then you need to have coached something like two of the last 3 years in the WNBA. And the NCAA, I believe it was 5 years as an NCAA coach. So that WNBA piece only affects the WNBA representatives. And so Mary Nell is fine. You know, she is there. Jen Gillum was in the WNBA last year as a head coach, even though she didn't stay the entire year. So they both follow or fall under the WNBA selection procedures, and then the Doug Bruno and Gino fall under the NCAA procedures.
Okay, so it just has to have that mix. It doesn't have to be one particular
Correct.
The head or the other.
Yeah, each coach doesn't have to have, So the head coach doesn't have to have been in the WNBA.
So it just happened to fall that way with Van and then Donovan.
Correct.
Okay. And then also, I assume that after the Olympics, there will probably start to be discussions on the next round of coaches?
Yes, and that will be dependent a little bit on winning or losing. Because if you win, you automatically qualify for the 2014 World Championship. And you do not have to go through the qualification tournament. If you do not win, then you have to go through a qualification tournament in the year 2013, which will simply mean that we need to pick the head coach sooner rather than later. So, you know, a lot of that is we certainly will take several months off and just enjoy ourselves. But there's always the question of who's next that looms out there. But we don't, once again, similar to picking the 12th player, we wouldn't necessarily pick it until we sort of have to. And that will be dependent on whether we win the gold medal or not.
Like on the men's side, if he is interested, would there be consideration to retain Coach Ariyama?
That's one option, certainly. The men did it this year.
Right.
I do think there's a lot of coaches that would love to be the Olympic coach. And so, you know, there's probably positives for doing it one way and positives for doing it another way. But that hasn't even been discussed by our group. And we do have a little bit of a separate committee that selects the coaches and provides direction for the program. And that's what's called our steering committee. And Teresa Edwards, Renee Brown, and myself do double duty. We do the player selection committee and the steering committee. And then the steering committee has also, as a part of it, our past president, Val Ackerman, and our CEO, Jim Tooley. So that committee that does select the coach, we haven't had any conversation about it, nor, you know, even in a throwing it out there when we see each other socially. So I really don't know the direction we'll go moving forward, but there's certainly – the good news is, like players, we have a lot of coaches who are interested and quality people.
Well, Carol, how you get all of this done, and then at the same time, that doesn't even get into the fact that, you know, all the letters have gone out now, I'm assuming, for the U teams and trying to gather them for their summer competitions at the same time. And I mean, hey, at least you got a point guard that's your assistant. You know.
Well, there you go. There you go. You know, it's funny. We just sort of keep rolling these things out week after week. And there's never a dull moment, which I think, again, is why we like our jobs as much as we do. And how can you not when you, again, you know, if you take Diana Taurasi and put her in a 16-year-old's body, that's pretty entertaining as well. So it's just, it really is a fun deal. And our trials for that are going to be May 16th to the 21st. So we are sending invitations out and gathering the names of the people that are going to be coming and then picking them. And, you know, good example, Brianna Stewart, who was the high school player of the year this year. She's already played on four teams for us. So, you know, that's pretty amazing in itself.
It really is.
We've started so young that we know them at this age. They know us, and they get an affinity, and they're very loyal and passionate about representing their country, and that's just nothing but good stuff for us.
And whenever I talk to these players, one of the things that I like to ask them is to talk about what USA Basketball means to them. And just the responses are almost always, you know, the same about, you know, the goosebumps of being on top of the medal stand and what it's like to have that, those three letters on your chest. You know, there is no doubt. And now especially, you know, it's great to see, you know, I don't want to keep you up. We could talk all day, but I, you know, having Katrina McClain join Teresa Edwards in the Hall of Fame, the Naismith Hall of Fame, you know, it's just further has to be gratification to you for, you know, what's been going on with the program and everything over the years.
Well, especially for Katrina, because even Teresa has done some coaching in the WNBA and she's, you know, she played. But Katrina's one of those, what a fantastic basketball player who the world really doesn't know because she didn't play in the WNBA. She was just right before it. And, you know, that was one of those where you, on international teams, they have so much respect for her. And I'm just thrilled that she has the opportunity to have the rest of our country appreciate her by going into the Naismith Hall of Fame. That's terrific. And you know, a little special for me, obviously Teresa and Katrina were the first two on that 95-96 team.
Right.
And we just will keep seeing more and more of those players get inducted, and it's satisfying from afar, and I just, what great representatives of women's basketball.
Well, Carol, I want to congratulate you on the amazing job that you've done building up this program. It is truly, you know, just an absolute machine, the way that it runs and the way that you guys have it functioning. And it's so impressive to see from, you know, the little bit of inside that I get to see in my position, the efficiency that everything runs with. You know, congratulations, and I'm looking forward to a great summer of USA basketball.
Well, thank you very much. I am too, and, you know, we're always, if there is a cog at some point that gets a little stuck, we're always happy to hear ways to make it even better, because that's the whole point, is to keep making it as best we can. So I really appreciate it. Enjoyed talking with you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
This is Dan Hughes of San Antonio Silver Stars, and you are listening to Dishin' and Swishin' and enjoying every minute of it.
Hi, everybody. It's David Siegel, your host for Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoop. And it is WNBA draft time. And all over the place, everybody's putting up their mock drafts and doing things like that. And, you know, what I decided to do this time is, everybody knows that this month's draft is going to be a crapshoot, other than NECA Gwumike going first. So rather than get into who's who and who's going to take who, I wanted to try and give you a look at what draft day is like for these young ladies who are getting their opportunity to live a dream and go pro. And to do that, I have brought on one of my favorite guests, who's been on a couple times now. I'm pleased to welcome the Indiana Fever's Jeanette Poland back to the show. Jeanette, how are you doing today?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Before we start talking about the draft, Jeanette, can you tell all your Indiana Fever fans, how is the winter? How is playing overseas, and what's going on with your game?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm very excited for the season to start again. I can't believe how fast it's coming up. And, you know, the end of this month, we'll be getting into training camp, which is, you know, also very exciting. But my off season was good overall. I would say I learned a lot about what it is, what it's like overseas, just the experience. It was nice to have one of my former Indiana Fever teammates with me, Tangela. She really helped me a lot and kind of showed me the ropes a little bit. Right now I'm back in California and working out, just getting ready for the next season to come.
Was there a particular part of your game that you wanted to focus on when you were over there?
Yeah, I think one thing in particular that I've been wanting to work on for a while is a lot of two-man game stuff and off the ball, screens, you know, trying to get my shot quicker, trying to get the ball off quicker. And, you know, I think right now people know me probably mainly as a three-point shooter, but I definitely have not always been a three-point shooter. And kind of going back to my roots before I really started focusing on my three, because I know, you know, high school and even early college days, I was mainly a slasher, so for me to expand my game to the three-point line was big for me. And so, yeah, I think mainly I just tried to go back to little things in my game that probably needed retuning, a lot of ball handling stuff, and just working on things that will hopefully give me a chance to contribute more this next season.
Well, the Connecticut fan in me says I'm disappointed in all that. Because you're enough of a handful as the three-point shooter. You had other dimensions to the game, and it's going to be even tougher to stop. So I'm looking forward to the season, and I think it's going to be a big success. I like the way the Fever is looking. So,
yeah,
but we'll get
too.
Into all that stuff down the road as we get closer to the season. Let's talk WNBA draft. Now, the first thing was, now, if I recall correctly, at the end of your season senior year, you got hurt at the very end of the last game.
Yeah, literally the last 4 or 5 seconds of the game, I did, yeah.
So when you started, you had to face the idea of figuring out how serious you were injured in addition to the fact that you found out that you were invited to ESPN's offices for the WNBA draft.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting just scenario. We lost, and then not only did we lose, but I, you know, tweaked my ankle, and right away they got x-rays just to see what, you know, if anything was broken or, you know, what the actual problem would be. But I've dealt with so many ankle injuries that I kind of had a feeling about what it was and, you know, how serious it was. So for me, like, I think the draft was a lot later, I think, than a lot later last season than it is this season. So I had a little bit of time to rehab. I got fit, you know, went back to Stanford and got a lot of treatment on it. And that was very helpful because when going into the draft, I knew how I felt. So it was definitely a tough time and also very nerve-wracking. But, you know, you got to just kind of have faith in yourself and what you can do and hope that, you know, a team out there is going to have faith in you.
Were you concerned at all that that might impact where you were going in the draft since the season comes so soon after the draft?
Yeah, I was a little concerned, and that's why I think there were a few times that I had the opportunity to tell people and get it out, you know, kind of spread the word that I was okay and that I wasn't, you know, it wasn't going to impact me too much going into training camp and going into the draft. I didn't want that to be a factor because, like I said, I've dealt with ankle injuries before, and it's just kind of another ankle injury for me. So mostly I just tried to get it out there that I was okay and that I'd be ready to go for training camp.
Now, how soon after the last game, after the championship game was held, did they first contact you and say, all right, make your travel plans. We want you to come to Bristol.
I'm not sure exactly what the timeline was of it, but I do remember when I found out, I was just, you know, very excited because I'm not sure exactly who picks, you know, the top 15 players that go, but I was extremely happy that I was one of them, and the chance to get picked to play for a WNBA team was obviously on my mind a lot.
Now, you had the advantage also of sharing this experience with a teammate. So the three Tennessee girls and the two Miami girls that are all looking at this year, you know, they at least get to share this experience. You had Kayla to share it with.
Yeah, and, I mean, Kayla and I have known each other for a while, even before Stanford. We joke about it, like we've been rooming with each other because of our names in the alphabet with, you know, between the McDonald's All-American game and USA stuff and, I mean, all the way through college. So it's kind of funny that we ended up rooming together during the WNBA draft process and the orientation and all of that. You know, I've gotten to know Kayla a lot over the years, and it's cool to be able to experience all the way from when we were in high school to after college.
So you fly to Connecticut. As soon as you get off the plane, where do they take you in? What do you, and do they start you right away with, you know, different orientations and events? And, you know, it seems like it's a whirlwind.
Yeah, it's very compact because there's just so much information that they want to get out to the draftees. And we got there pretty late that night. So I don't think anybody got there the day of, maybe with the exception of a couple people. But we got there that night and just kind of rested up. They gave us all the stuff we needed for the next day. And the next day we started pretty early. They had, you know, they had food and drinks and all that for us, and we basically stayed in the hotel that they were that they put us up in, and brought people in that were that are in tons of different parts of things that are connected with the WNBA and being a professional athlete. You know, everything from styling and, you know, what to wear to we had a policeman come in, we had referees come in, we had, you know, financial people come in. It was just very, very informative, I think, for a lot of people, myself included, because, you know, you're coming out of college and you might not always get informed about the things that they were telling us about, and so it's nice to at least know what you're getting into and know what you're probably going to be dealing with for the next, you know, however many years you're playing in the WNBA.
You mean there's something that Stanford doesn't prepare you for?
Very few things. Let me clarify. Yeah.
Well, hey, after watching John Gruden talk to Andrew Luck on television yesterday and the things that they were going on, I mean, they, you know, yeah, there's no doubt that they prepare you for an awful lot there. But, yeah, I got to admit that some of the things like, you know, the financial side and things like that, that's got to be an eye-opener.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, I loved it, and I think it was just – it was a great experience. You know, it's a long day. I think we went a full day and then maybe another half day or something like that. I can't remember exactly, but I know there was a lot of information thrown at us. But very organized and very well done. I thought they really tried to get us involved in everything that was going on, each little presentation that they gave us. And, you know, we came away with a lot of packets, a lot of little goodies. It was nice. It was very, very well put together.
So Maya Moore aside, and also then for this year, NECA aside, because they were – seem to be documented everywhere. ESPN had the cameras, and I'm sure they will on NECA and all.
Yeah.
The rest of you, you guys all got to spend some time together. I mean, you've all known each other through the AAUs and in a lot of cases USA Basketball and all. But it must have been nice to be able to be after opponents, to be able to hang together and bond a little bit more with your incoming class.
Yeah, it's fun to catch up with people. You know, there are some players that I hadn't met before, and so it's cool to meet them and get to know them a little bit, because, you know, we've played each other so much or seen each other play on TV, and you don't really know who they are, but you get to meet them, you get to talk to them a little bit, and see what it's like at their school, like where they went to college and their coaches and all of that. And so, I mean, we definitely have tons of stuff to talk about and things to bond over, which is really cool. But yeah, like you were saying, a lot of us have played each other since we were in high school, before high school. So it's really cool to see how far people have come, and that some of us, you know, are still, you know, shooting for that ultimate goal of playing in the WNBA.
So are any of you guys, like, you know, still mad at each other for some of those games?
No, I think we all kind of just let things go, unless, you know, what's in the past is in the past, I guess.
you didn't want to give Maya a shove someplace, you know, Vandersloot didn't want to just push you down the stairs at some point or anything.
No, not at all. Everybody was just really nice. It's cool. Like you said, we've had hard-fought battles. You know, we've played in championship games against each other and all of that. But, you know, we're all basketball players. We all want to do big things, and it's cool to just see that everyone's really down to earth and fun now with.
Now, one of the things that they do on the weekend, if I recall correctly, was there's like a friends and family type clinic set up where there's ESPN employees, kids, where they start getting you indoctrinated into the WNBA Cares program.
Yeah. Yeah, so we went over to the campus, the ESPN campus, and
an experience in itself.
Yeah, which is really cool. I mean, that's the first time I've ever been there, of course, and You know, ESPN is just like another household name, and you know, everybody knows about sports, and everybody's somewhat knowledgeable about ESPN. So it was cool to see where it all really comes together, and to be able to kind of put our skills and our leadership out there to show these ESPN employees that, you know, this is what's coming, you know, this is what the future holds, hopefully. It was nice, and I think that the kids got a lot out of it, and we had fun as well.
Do you ever see satellite dishes that size before?
No, I don't think so. Well, actually, I take that back. We have some pretty big dishes up at Stanford back behind the school, so, yeah.
I was amazed the first time I drove
by
there.
They're pretty big.
All right, so draft day comes. How early did you get up that morning?
Pretty early.
Sleep okay the night before?
I wouldn't say I slept great. You know, you think about a lot of things when you're getting ready, but overall, just trying to stay calm and just say to myself, whatever happens, happens. I've been lucky enough to be given this opportunity to be here, and that's just kind of my mindset, because you don't want to, I don't know, you don't want to get your hopes up to be let down, is kind of how I looked at it, because I was just super excited to be there already. But you know, we got up the next morning and got ready and went over. They had people do our hair and makeup as well, so that was
kind of
fun. And
everybody looked fantastic.
Yeah, they did a great job. I really thought the people that were working on our hair and makeup really put us together well. And we got to pick out our outfits, and they kind of handled the rest, which was cool.
So now you get to the studio, and they take you to the green room. Now, by this point, did you have any idea that Indiana was looking at you, or did you think that there might be somebody else higher or lower that you might end up with?
I had no idea, actually. Who that Indiana was interested. Maybe a little bit, but it's just really hard to tell, and even hard to guess, because you don't know who's going to go before you in your position, or what the teams are really looking for. So, yeah, I was surprised to go ninth. I thought I would go lower, not to put myself down, but we had a very strong class last year, with a lot of talented players, and I was just overwhelmed when I heard my name get picked at nine. It was incredible. It was very nerve-wracking sitting there with my parents. They were there supporting me, but you know, it was a great day, and to be able to say that I was picked in the WNBA draft was just really cool too.
And then you still got to face all the media and all of that, and that's always a blast, but you've handled that certainly enough times from Stanford. And then you get to try and figure out what Linda is saying.
Yeah, it was, after I had done a lot of the media stuff, I was able to talk to Lynn and Kelly and some of the other coaches that were on the line, and they were just very supportive and very excited, and it's always reassuring when you talk to everyone and they're excited to have you come, because I was really excited. So it was cool to see how energetic they were.
So what was the most exciting to you when you first heard Indiana? Was it the fact that they were so successful? Was it playing with Tamika Catchings? Was there anything in particular that right away you said, oh, my God, this is what I've got coming up in the next month?
I think it was a little of everything, actually, because I had heard how great of a program it was overall. And then, of course, you have these veteran players that have been there and have been through the league for many years and know what they're doing. So for me to be able to say that those are the ones that are going to lead me this year was really cool. You know, obviously Tamika Catchings is one of a kind, and she showed that this year, but we had so many other great veteran players, and young players that really helped me along. It was such a great team to start my WNBA career on. I can't say that enough. Everybody was so welcoming and just, you know, willing to help me whenever I needed it and not really trying to shut me out because I was a rookie. Everybody was just very helpful. It was fun.
Hey, I still think that you were one Tamika injury away from the finals. And when you got there, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It was a great team. That's
yes,
for sure.
I agree.
So these young ladies that are going to be drafted next week, what do you think will be the hardest thing for them to adjust to? What would you give them for a piece of advice for them getting situated with their new teams?
I would just say to put that extra work in. Whatever you need to work on individually, it will help if you get in there and you work on it extra. I know there's a lot of two-man game stuff. There's a lot of pick and roll, obviously, but the game is faster, but I don't think it's anything that none of them can handle. I just think it's an adjustment, just like, you know, it is from high school to college. It's going to take a little bit of time to get adjusted to that. But, you know, if they've got a great work ethic and they're really there to get better, then I think they'll all be fine.
So the Indiana Fever pick 11th in the draft this year. So who do you want to see fall down to 11th other than Nevin?
I know. I mean, that would have been my pick. I don't know who. I mean, it's like I would feel bad saying anybody else.
I know. I'm just putting. I'm not looking for an answer. I'm just giving. This
okay.
Season, yeah. Don't worry about that. Well, Jeanette, I think it's gonna be a great season for the Fever, and I'm looking forward to continuing to follow your progress and development, even if it's to the detriment of the Connecticut Sun. I will.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I want to thank you for taking time tonight. I know you're working hard and getting ready, and it's all going to be coming up again soon.
It is, and it'll be fun. It'll be another battle. There were a lot of great games last year, which was cool to see, and you know, hopefully with this new batch, it'll be even more exciting.
Well, Jeanette, thank you very much. Have a good evening. And
thanks so much.
We'll see you soon.
All right, thank you for having me.